Welcome to the Nerd Alternative Podcast, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. We are back. We have returned. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Yeah, so yeah, our hiatus was a little bit longer than we expected, but we have returned because, you know, glorious purpose and all that. I don't know if we mentioned before, but we will be going on a bi-weekly basis with our episodes. So about 2 episodes a month. I don't know why every time I think about that, I have to actively think about if that's correct.
It's because bi-weekly is like, is it twice a week or is it?
What is that? We're going to try and have a bit more structure to our episodes, I guess. We're going to try and chop it up evenly between having just general rambly, nerdy episodes and more focused, more serious, you know, grown-up talk, essentially. But, you know, we're going to have our interviews, our reviews, all that stuff that you guys love all chopped in there. So, you know, business as usual.
You can't stop these puns.
The puns will never stop. I heard a good one. Do you know what? I had a meeting at work today and one of my managers was running off the maddest puns. It was not stopping. I was like, I said, we love this. It was not stopping.
Let me apply to your office.
You could be like the team motivator with the puns. But yes, to kick off this grand return, we have an amazing interview. I'm not sure if anyone knows, but me and Ram are actually the same person. So I'm going to turn into Ram shortly. And Aram and Hassan are going to sit down with Munira Douglas, who is the editor-in-chief of VX Animation. Hassan, if you want to give a little quick intro before you jump into it.
VX Animations are an animation studio based in Nigeria, but they have people working internationally as well. Their big focus is to put a spotlight and to give a platform to African animators and storytellers and comic creators to share their work with the world and to provide African storytellers the ability to share their stories on an international basis, which is an amazing, amazing thing. And we got to talk to their editor-in-chief, which is incredible. Technically, we're in the future at the moment. I'm going to go into the past in just a second to listen to the interview.
What is even time? Time is fluid.
It's dynamic.
Dynamic, the same thing. I have just come back from work, guys. So, without further ado, I think I'm going to transform into Ram. And... we'll leave you with the interview. Next episode, we'll have a proper good catch up there. So without further ado, bish, bash, bosh.
Hello and welcome to the Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy. Today, you're joined by me, Ram.
Me, Hassan.
And we are missing our third member today, Levi. But hopefully you'll see him next time. But instead, we have an exciting guest that we're going to be talking to today. So I'd like to introduce Munira Douglas, who is Editor-in-Chief of VX Animation, writer and director of the short film Glitch, which was selected for Toronto Short Film Festival. Hi.
Welcome to our humble recording.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me.
So let's kick off with the question that we like to ask all of our guests, which is, what is your nerd origin story? So this can be your favorite comic book character, or just anything that kind of kickstarted your journey as a nerd, if you do identify as a nerd. Yeah.
So I started off really kind of watching a lot of anime and cartoons when I was younger. That kind of really got me interested in kind of that whole nerddom culture. You know, I was very big on, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon. You know, I actually got like Gundam Wing and all of that type of technical, all that type of stuff. And just kind of having that experience, especially. And experiencing that, you know, with my family as well. It really kind of propelled me into more in terms of getting more interested in, you know, that kind of science fictional element, you know, animation, anime, and really wanting to understand how it all worked. And then I kind of got more into, you know, comics, because that was really something I loved to read. But it was never, comics wasn't something that I was necessarily interested in kind of looking at, because I like the visual of animation. But I did get more into, you know, comics and things of that nature later on. And it was more of a collection, though, as opposed to, you know, being interested in actually reading it in that nature. But my biggest interest really was, you know, animation, manga, kind of getting into that as well. And then also, you know, like I mentioned, the, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, you know, Justice League, Recess, all of that. And kind of, it was just really more of the experience. I like the experience of it. I think that's what it was, you know, the experience of having that kind of family time, and just having that kind of community at home. And just, you know, when that happened, we kind of got into all of that. We wanted to talk about it. We wanted to know, okay, what's going to happen next on Dragon Ball Z? And it's like, you know, being able to have that culture when there wasn't a culture for it, you know, there was no internet, and there was no, you know, anybody at school necessarily discussing it unless it was like guys, right? And they didn't want, you know, me to be a part of that conversation. It's like, I'm going away. And then I can talk about it with my friends. So it was really the culture of just being able to discuss and just talk about it, about what's going to happen and who's the best, you know, who's the strongest and all of that. But it really just started from there. And I grew into that phenomenon. I remember, I think I was in grade six, it had to be grade six, because I remember Pokemon the movie came out, and it was like the biggest thing ever, where kids, like, they actually took the day off for school just to watch it. And I don't know what it was. I feel like it was the shift, I think, where it was like, okay, this is a phenomenon. Like, animation can be as big as Star Wars, right? As long as you have kind of that community, you have that, you know, that audience. And so for me, it was, my parents are from the Caribbean. They're not pulling me out, nothing. Like, they don't care what's going on. Dad's like, what are you talking about? No. So I didn't get to go. I had to wait for it to come on VHS, right? But I feel like that was a shift, because then they had the trading, that's when the game came out, right? The trading cards and everything. Yeah. So it was Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon. I remember those are the two biggest things. And for me, that was kind of like the shift where I realized, like, this is so interesting. And I kind of just got into everything that was really consumed Japanese anime and Japanese culture, you know, from, you know, the little pocketbooks, like the pens and everything, all of that. I was just obsessed. Mm-hmm. And so it really kind of stemmed from there. You know, comics was really something that was interesting in collecting it, but I never had a discussion really around it and to be a part of it. But for me, it was really the anime and just, you know, how they could use so many different, you know, themes in that. And then also it would just look amazing, and just making sure that it kind of kept up culturally with relevance, you know. Yeah, I'm in, like, love with anime, so that's where it started, anime for me. So yes,
you're in good company here then.
Yeah, I think,
like, a lot of us, like,
got, yeah, I can only talk about it. with literally my brothers and sisters and everybody else. It was like, it didn't exist. It's like outside of my family, it's like Dragon Ball Z didn't exist. So it was a little weird for him. So I was like, but then when Pokemon and that huge phenomenon came, I was like, oh, you know, I'm not the only one that cares about it, except, you know, my friends did not care. So yeah,
there was a lot of posturing, like, no, I don't watch that. It's nerdy.
Still to this day, I have a friend that I've been friends with since we were like six, right? And till this day, she still reminds me, like, you're still into that.
It's just like, yeah, you are too now.
Yeah,
come on, she would remind me
that. Oh, I remember when I was like, she first sat next to me, and the first thing, I didn't talk to anybody. I would just be drawing like Pokemon stuff, and she's like, and there was this time where we had to like partner up. I hated that. Oh, let's partner up, you know? And it's like, I don't know. Can you just do it, teacher?
I don't know you like that.
What am I supposed to say? So I remember she came up to me and she just saw me draw. She reminds me till this day. I just saw you drawing these weird characters and I asked you to be my partner and you didn't even look at me. And I'm like, yeah, because I was busy drawing Pokemon. And she's like, and you're still into that. I'm like, yes. Like, what is the problem? But yeah.
It's like, listen, this Bulbasaur ain't going to draw itself.
And like, it's like, I have to. It was like an obsession. I have to draw this. And so, you know, it's just funny, like, I can't believe it, like, 20 times, a long time. I feel like so old, but, yeah, that was a long time. And it's still, you know, it's great to honestly see how much things have grown, where now it's normal to be like, okay, we're going to have a whole podcast on it. You know what I mean? Like, that would never have been the case before. It was just like a very niche, like, audience where it's like, okay, we can only talk about it with certain people and nobody else cares about it. But it's like, no, this is an actual culture. This is a nerddom. And it's great that there's different levels to it as well, you know, because I'm an otaku, man. But then there's people who are just obsessed with comics. And that's, you know, that's their thing. It's just great that to see kind of how everything kind of just evolved over the years. And I'm excited to see kind of where it goes as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like the best thing about the internet is like allowing people to find comfort in their niches and like saying that, like, if you love this very specific thing, that's not just okay. There's going to be people who share that love with you. I'm like, that's amazing to me.
Is, you know, in their 30s and still wants to watch cartoons. And it's like, why not? You know? I don't have to explain to you. Just let me find my people.
Yeah. It's like, hey, if, exactly. Yeah. It's like, if you're happy, that's what matters. Yeah. That's awesome.
I guess our next question is kind of how your writing journey has led you to where you are now. And why animation specifically, especially with, I love Glitch, by the way, and I'm really sick, and more on that later, but why animation and kind of when did you start writing? Was there a particular form that you started with and then moved into animation? Mm-hmm. Tell us everything.
Yeah, so I always, you know, I had, let me start off with saying, you know, I was absolutely like in love with books. That is something that people who know me know. I love to read. And so from a very young age, I always read, but then also it was influenced from specifically, you know, my dad. He was very big on education. And so one of the things that he had done was he would make me write book reports on books that I read. And he's Jamaican. So... So it was just like this thing where, but he would never read them. That was the thing. Like, he would just make me read.
My mom did the same thing.
I love that so much. Yeah, they set you a Sisyphean task of just like writing these.
But he was just like, just, you know what? Because I would read a book and he was just like, oh, write this book report or whatever. And then he would never read it. But I realized how much it influenced my need to tell stories, and not even just tell stories, but to look at other stories and be fascinated by them, right? And so it started from there. And then I really got into mainly poetry and spoken word, right? And the need to be creative and kind of find a voice. Because at the time, it was not really common to say, okay, I'm going to write a script or I'm going to write necessarily a short story or anything like that. I was really looking at it as like, okay, how can I get people to hear my stuff? The best way to do it would be, okay, I'm going to write this poetry and people are going to hear it. You know, it's not like I can tell a story to somebody, you know, at this event and that's how it's going to go. And I didn't even think about it as in that way because I didn't have, I would say, the confidence to, or really there wasn't any platform to do it, to be honest, at the time. That I knew of. And so when I started doing that, I got more comfortable in writing and kind of wanting to find out my writing style. And so I got into, you know, radio broadcasting, where I did, you know, journalism and wrote articles on, you know, various topics like Afropunk, looking at Black cosplay, you know, areas that were very niche. And so simultaneously, I was also going to University of Toronto, where I was doing my English specialist program, where I learned more technical, you know, writing, as well as, you know, studying different programs such as, you know, children's literature, where we read like Harry Potter or science fiction, and we looked at Mary Shelley's, you know, Frankenstein. And that's kind of where my, that's why I kind of really kind of formulated everything in terms of, oh, this is can be an actual thing. Because also at the time, you know, when they're doing that whole, you know, in high school, you have to, you know, talk about career and stuff like that. I never saw writing as a viable career unless you're going to be a novelist. Right. And so the only novelist I knew was like Dean Koontz and like Stephen King, you know, all these old white guys. And so I'm like, well, it's not going to be me. So, you know, writing these books. And I honestly did not see writing as like a viable career choice. So I always just looked at it as like, okay, this is just a great hobby. And it wasn't really until I saw kind of more opportunities coming up where I could, you know, put my writing out there. That's when I kind of, you know, started really kind of developing and trying to figure out my voice. What is it that I want to say? What is it that I want to show? And so luckily I had, well, luckily kind of like just randomly, I've always had these ideas in my mind, or I jot them down. And so for, you know, if we had to kind of pinpoint a very specific moment for me, in 2014, 2015, I wrote a science fiction novella, and it, and that kind of lended itself to adapting it to the screen, right? And that's where the glitch came from, right? So I had adapted that, a small scene in that novella, it's unpublished, and I had written it and worked with, you know, an animator, you know, Carly Forehand, Toronto animator. I'd gotten them a music artist, King Bliss, and a concept artist, Komi Olaf, to kind of put it all together for me. And it was featured in 2020 film festivals. And that's kind of where it really kind of came together, because I really didn't have an idea of how to do it. You know, it's kind of just like, okay, let's do this. This is what I want to do. How do I get it to put together? And so it was really just a trial and error. It was very difficult. But I realized doing it that way helped me get to where I am, because I wasn't being mentored or told by anybody, okay, do this, do it like that. And I just had to figure it out. And that, as difficult as it was, it made it so much better when I could say, it's done. Whether anybody likes it, it doesn't matter. I got it done.
No, you did
and
it.
So I think that's also, as a creative, and like, I know a lot of people, like, what happens is, you know, we have these ideas, but it's executing it. And so being able to say, I executed it, right? And so gratefully, if I, you know, I did that. And so now I'm working, you know, with my team now and VX Animation, and we were able to put together Glitch, which is kind of more of a restructured version of that science fiction novella, where we're pushing it more forward and we have more elements of the story in it. And it was, you know, it's now being previewed at Carnegie Hall. You know, I've never pictured that in my mind, but it wasn't until I had to go through all those little steps of reading these books, writing the poetry, you know, it's everything kind of builds up. And so you get to that point. So, long story short, I started reading.
No, I'm like, keep going, keep going.
Yeah, so it really, and I just love animation and the way that the visuals, and I feel like as well, you know, having conversation, people who don't watch anime or don't watch animation or just think it's a kid's thing, that's the thing that I'm just like, there's so many different animations out there that can tell different stories. Right. And And it's just so open, you know, you can tell different stories in terms of, you know, science fictional perspective, a dramatic perspective, a romantic perspective. And there's so many different things that can be done with it. I think that's what intrigues me the most, is that I feel like live action is very limited to a certain extent. It's limited to the CGI that's available, right? Whereas I feel like animation, you can take it to a whole another completely different world, different abilities, different things can happen, and you don't have to explain it to anybody. You know, you don't have to explain, okay, well, how did this person do, you know, just fly through the sky? It's like, no, well, that's a part of it. It's going to look good regardless, as long as the animator is great at it. You know, as opposed to, I feel like live action, there's certain limitations based off of the time period. And for animation, yes, there's like, you know, there's new trends and techniques and stuff like that that's constantly evolving. But it's open, you know, there's no limitations as to whether or not you can do a Kamehameha. You know we can't do that in real life, but it allows us to think, to fantasize. And I feel like as adults, I think that's what the problem is. I feel like as adults, we get to the point where it's like, okay, we're at this certain age, we can no longer imagine about, you know, Big Bang attacks. You know what I mean? Like, don't even think about it. And it's like, why not? You know, it's not, that's what kind of keeps us in this creative element where it's like, we're still kids. And it's like, you know, not everything has to be all, you know, doom and gloom all the time. And I feel like animation gives that gateway for anybody to just enjoy themselves and to see things creatively and see things differently as well. And to just really open up that kind of, that creative opportunity.
I feel like that's animation also like feels ageless at times. Like there's some times where you watch an old animated thing and it just feels like it still feels really new.
It definitely the feeling of even just the nostalgia of it, really, and just going back, like, and you can revamp it. Like, how many times can you revamp, like, Justice League? Like, and you'll still watch it. You know what I mean? It's timeless. Like you mentioned, like, there's certain things that are just classic and just timeless. You know, they just revamped, you know, or they brought it back, The Proud Family. And it's, like, it's another generation. But it's, like... there's just something about it, and just the character designs, you get so in love with the character designs and the voice actors, you know, and you can recognize people's voices. Yes. Like, who would this? The fact that you can recognize Naruto's voice, I mean, there's nothing more influential than that.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, millions of people can recognize a voice just by hearing it and just by experiencing that. And I think that is what kind of, you know, adds to the element of just that community base and just the excitement of animation and where it can go. And to get better recognition, to be honest, as well, because I also still feel like it's not deemed as influential as, you know, live action. But it is. It has shaped so much of our culture. You know, it's in, people will rap about, you know, certain things. Yeah. Like it's ridiculous really to really consider just how much, you know, animation, anime, manga, all these different things are part of our culture, and then not really, and still consider it as a niche. It's really mind-boggling to me.
It's having the snobby cake and eating it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, you know, some segment of the population doesn't want to admit that, okay, this is actually a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, these people actually have something going on here. It's just not nerds living in our basement just consuming. I mean, it's like, no, this is a thing, you know? You can popularize, you know, certain graphic tees and having, you know, Star Wars across your chest and not necessarily be just this loser. You know?
Yeah, for real.
I don't know why. And it's funny because it's there is this sexy cosplay now that is just like taking over, which I'm not sure how, you know, I'm grateful. It's great. But at the same time, it's like, okay, now it's the sexy cosplay, which is interesting. So
all I'm saying is by hook or by crook, so long as people can accept other people's enjoyment, it's all good, right?
Yeah. It is.
The funniest part of this is like it's cyclical. Like something new turns up that is denounced because it's not adhering to traditions, or it's bucking trends, or it's going outside of the established way of doing things. And there's always a kickback until a point where it becomes part of the cultural zeitgeist. Like Pokemon is the prime example that you brought up. Like until that point, with Pokemon, there wasn't this generational conversation about what animation could be and what it could mean to you as a person. Like for me, I think good animation kickstarts that dreaming, that fire of like kind of creativity in your heart and makes you want to pursue it. Like a good game absorbs you into the world and makes you want to learn about the world or learn about the systems and makes you want more. That's what good anime and animation does. It makes you want more. And I'm like, if that isn't art, nothing is. You know, like if something that can capture that isn't art, then what is?
Mm-hmm. It pulls you into that world. You know, you don't want to just, you know, after it's done, it's not that, okay, we're done and let's walk away. It's like, no, like, I want to know the backstory. I want to know the world building. I want to know who created it. I want to know where he got the idea from. Mm. I want to know the language, you know. It's the phenomenon of it where it's like, now what else can we do with it? So it's just interesting how vital it is, you know, in terms of storytelling. But it's like comic books are not considered literature, but it really is, you know. But it's who is deciding really what is what. Mm. You know, who decides that comic books can't be considered literature when Watchmen is like one of the greatest graphic novels ever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which I just got into as well. I had just gotten Watchmen, and
it's very interesting. Good. It's very good.
It is. Someone conveniently borrowed it from me, so I haven't finished it. Because I got the
it's chunky.
Yeah, I had gotten, there was a special, I want to say a special edition one where it has the Rorschach on the cover. Yes. And it's the but I didn't know it was a special edition. I just picked it up. It was the last one. I'm like, oh great, there's a Watchmen, let me read it. And they saw it and they're a nerd and they're like, oh,
it's just hyperventilating.
Let me hold this for you. And I was like, yeah. And so I was like, oh yeah, sure. You can I'll, cause I was like, I told you I'm in the middle of like, I always start and then I'll find something else. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm reading this other thing, read it. And then when I found out, I'm like, hold on. That's a special one. He's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, so you knew? Yeah, I knew. I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, we ain't friends no more. I just want you to know that.
So luckily we're very, very good friends. So so that's what happened. So that was just funny. And it was just funny. It just, you know certain things, you don't know certain things. And so kind of getting, like I said, I wasn't always into like comics and graphic novels and that respect, and so having somebody who does know it on that end, he's just like, oh, I know what this is. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Being naive and everything. But it was just funny how, you know, there's different, like I said, different levels of
nerddom,
of intelligence on this stuff. Yeah definitely.
So I guess we shall move on to our next set of questions, I guess. What is, tell us more about VX Animation, who you are editor in chief of. How did it kind of come to be?
The origin story. So Vortex is actually a West African company based in Nigeria. And what we do is we export African-based content through comics, gaming, and animation. And I'm the editor-in-chief for specifically for VX Comics. So we have a comic platform, Vortex247.com, where readers can, the audience can read comic books from, you know, different publishers and from our own publishing as well for only $3 a month. And so for that, we provide creatives the opportunity to submit also their comic works, and we kind of review them and we give them that platform, and the audience can read these comics, and it's available to everyone. Because one of the things that we notice is that, you know, there's a lot of creatives out there. However, you know, there needs to be a platform. And so we're able to provide that platform for, you know, comic enthusiasts as well. Mm-hmm. And it's African-centered, African-based across the diaspora. You know, we have comics from people across the continent of Africa, in London, you know, we kind of in Canada. So, because that's where I'm based. And so we're able to kind of connect globally, really, creatives and writers and audience members as well on Vortex 247 and mm-hmm. be able to publish their work and provide a platform for that across the globe, really. And at VX Animation, you know, we're very keen on exporting, you know, film and short animation to our audience. And also we've done so many, you know, even lyric videos for music artists, prominent music artists like Rima and Washi Fire. And so there's so much more that can be done in terms of the animation field in Africa. You know, it's something that is definitely gotten a lot more interest and a lot more experience. And there's so much more that will be done and can be done as well in terms of the exporting of just African art and African animation and developing those animators as well. You know, a lot of them are self-taught, and there's so many, so much more education and experience that can be done. And what we do is that we have some of the best just kind of work on these projects. And I'm excited about that as well, kind of putting these projects together. And they were the ones that were able to develop Glitch, that is currently now previewing at Carnegie Hall, in such a short amount of time, to be honest, because, you know, animation is very, it takes quite a while and it's very tedious. You know, we had gotten the call about, you know, having work presented possibly at Carnegie Hall back in November. And we were able to have, you know, that 3-minute preview ready, you know, and for some people, you know, 3 minutes is not a lot in animation, but the work that goes into it. And so at VX Animation, you know, that is the service that we provide as well as provide, you know, putting out our own work, you know.
I started with at VX by right after I had gotten my film at the film festivals, The Glitch. I had just hit up, you know, different platforms to promote it, essentially. And so one of them was Vortex. And so when they found out about, you know, the film and checked it out, they had asked me if I'd be interested in being a comic writer for their Risha R series. I had never written, you know, in comic script format, so I was a little reluctant, but I agreed, you know, to, you know, I could learn and find that opportunity. And so it went well. And so we kind of moved on to another project in which we were, you know, a team-based project. We were working on a film script, and based off, you know, kind of my experience with that and everything, my experience in everything else, they had asked me to be you know, the editor-in-chief for VX Comics and, you know, oversee that kind of, to oversee all of that and being the executive editor for Vortex. And so that kind of where it started, it really started last year, almost a year now that I've been with Vortex. And so I kind of oversee all the writing projects, you know, the film scripts, work with the writing, the writers across that we have at Vortex, the roster that we have, you know, kind of soliciting other writers as well. And so that's how it started for me, you know, just kind of putting myself out there. And they offered to kind of put me on as the editor-in-chief.
That's awesome.
I think having a company like that is super, super cool, because I think recently I've been, so I do programming at BFI, and like we've been getting a lot more like films that are international, that are like from African countries, which to me as an African is very like comforting to see, especially because I think when I think about stories like Black Panther and stuff, it's like nice to have that story, but it would have been nice to have like an African person holding that kind of story. So yeah, I'm really excited about the work that you guys do.
Yeah. Black Panther, you know, for us, well, for somebody who, you know, saw it, I enjoyed the story itself. But, you know, speaking to other creatives, also interested more in, having it be more culturally driven, and I think that, you know, while it was a great story for what it was, there is that need, especially to have more culturally driven stories that can be in that that can exist in that space as well. But it definitely opened the door to more to show that, you know, these stories are commercially viable. And there are storytellers out there as well. You know, it's not just, it has to be, you know, necessarily an American or Ryan Coogler who does this. That opens the door for it, and that gives, you know, puts a spotlight on things, which is great. But, you know, there are creatives out there globally that are able to tell these stories from that perspective and be able to tell them authentically as well.
Yes. So the kind of next big project that you, well, one of the projects that you have going on is Black Rain, which currently has a Kickstarter, which just launched, if I'm correct, in February this month. So can you talk kind of about like what the project is, how it was conceived, and then we'll get into some of the meat and bones of the actual world.
Yeah, so Black Rain is such a personal project, you know, for us here at Vortex. So it really is, it was conceived in a way that we're very organic. You know, a lot of the, it is, because we are a Nigerian-based company, a lot of the members are familiar with, you know, the Niger Delta, or from the Niger Delta, and experience certain experience a tragedy, you know, of the oil spill that occurred. And so just kind of in talking with that, you know, the head of Vortex, Santo Julichuku, with his team, they developed this story that was able to reimagine the tragic events, but do it from a perspective where it's Afrofuturistic and meeting spirit fiction, which is, you know, our personally coined term, which blends the elements of African culture, mythology, spirituality, and history, right? Because there is that that's missing, you know, unfortunately, from Afrofuturism. A lot of it would be the history of African cultures. And so that was very important. And so it really happened organically. And so it comes from a very personal, a personal standpoint for a lot of these members of our team. And it can relate to, you know, just almost anybody that has experienced any type of, you know, environmental disaster as well. And that's what was very important, is that, you know, this tribe, the Ija tribe in the Niger Delta, you know, this happened years ago. However, they're still experiencing, you know, the tragic events of the water quality and the pollution and the environmental disaster of it. And so it's just very important for us to use, you know, our animation as a tool to speak to that, and to reimagine that, and to use that as a tool to propel, you know, some sort of social change or environmental change, and to speak out about the tragedies that occur, especially when it is you know, necessarily a native African, you know, tribe. You know, there's not necessarily that kind of that kind of coverage as well. You know, where's the injustice of that, you know? And unfortunately, because, you know, certain things in terms of, you know, are not publicized at that level as other, you know, other issues are. You know, we really want to be able to tell those stories to and make sure that there's a voice for these people.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. Again, it kind of reminds me of like a lot of there's been a lot of literature, I think, that kind of has been talking about like African stories and like that kind of folklore that is kind of overlooked a lot, but I haven't seen it in animation or like in comic form, so I think this is super exciting to see, especially since it's about a specific topic and a specific historical event. Can you talk it's kind of weird because I don't like, I want people to explore it and like check it out for themselves. You've got some like really cool like concept art and stuff already, but can you talk a little bit about the world and
Definitely. So so Black Rain, so it's on Kickstarter right now, so it is we would love to make it into a short film, so it's on Kickstarter right now. And so the it's focused on the planet of Eshan, and it's located in the Ogoni solar system. And so Eshan is, you know, a small water planet that's fully rich with, you know, vegetation, and it's a source of livelihood for the people, the tribe there. You know, they fish, they do deep sea farming, and all of this world is nourished by, you know, a natural mineral called manna, you know. And so this is what kind of gives life to this planet. And so unfortunately what happens is this planet, it becomes under siege and is attacked by what is called the Bell Conglomerate, right? The Bell Conglomerate, they are a group of people or species, or nomadic species, that are parasitic in nature. And what they do is they live on a planet-sized ship and they travel from planet to planet, just draining each planet of their resources using something called the Abyss, which is a machine that they personally had designed. The Bell Conglomerate are terrified throughout the galaxy because of their advanced technology, and so nobody is able to basically fight against them. And so what they do is when they visit these planets, they just decimate the livestock that's there, the species that are there, and they just drain them of their resources. And so unfortunately, in the story, planet Eshan, which is their next stop, they visit this planet and they completely decimate the tribe that's there, except for, you know, this one child, Bobini. And so the story is told through this child's, you know, this child's eyes, Bobini. And we get to kind of see his journey, the tragedy that he goes through. You know, his father is the chief of the tribe, Chief Dabara. And I'm excited to say that we've gotten Dayemi Okanlawan, a Nigerian TV and film theater and voice actor, to play Chief Dabara. And so we see it through his eyes, you know, just the journey of this, and the tragedy that he experiences, the isolation of having to witness his people under attack, and really wanting to kind of find a sense of home, and just also the feelings of revenge against this corporation. And on the project, we have, you know, Rad Seacrest, who is executive producer. He's the creator of Netflix's Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beast. Andy B. Kung, who is supervisor on the project as well. He's an amazing storyboard artist. He's worked with Cartoon Network, Netflix. And Chris Amick as well is also a supervisor, and he's a writer for Adult Swim and DreamWorks. And so, you know, kind of putting this story all together and just kind of building this world, really, when people see it, it's just really the world that they get immersed in. And, you know, the characters that and the story of Bobini and his journey towards, you know, wanting to his destiny, essentially, to rebuild back his tribe. And so we feel like it will resonates, you know, kind of with audiences, regardless of whether or not they're familiar, you know, with the story. It is a story that can resonate with everyone. You know, for example, the Flint water crisis. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that is far-fetched. Yeah. It's not something that's, you know, fictional or something that you can't resonate with. There's these constant environmental issues where we can't necessarily hold these large, you know, corporations accountable for the for the damage that they've done. Or if they are held accountable, it's not sufficient for the damage that's done, because like I mentioned, you know, it happened years ago, but they're still suffering as a result. And it's like, who's going to take care of the new generation? Who's going to take care of those kids that are in that area? And they don't have, you know, there's oil in their water system. So, you know, it's just very important, and it's very important to us and, you know, the team members at, you know, VX Animation that, you know, are part of that area, have come from that area as well, and were there to experience certain things, you know, to be able to tell that story through animation is very important as well. And to be able to say that, okay, we're going to be able to tell the story to, you know, people that might not be familiar with it as well, and had no idea that this had happened.
That's so cool. Do you want to go around?
You can make your comment first, because my thing is a question.
The thing I love, like, so much about, like, sci-fi, and I think I've said this before on a previous episode, is that the best sci-fi always tells human stories in extraordinary situations and extraordinary settings. It adds magic and wonder to what is ostensibly the struggles or the things that we see and we're scared about, or that we love, you know? And like seeing the story of the reality of the Niger Delta told through this lens can really bring it home to a lot of people. And like, I'm just like, you give me a space opera with a big conglomerate, I'm in. I'm already sold. But it's the fact that it's telling this very, very nascent story, which is relevant to so many people that a lot of people just would never have known about. Like, honestly, no idea. I hadn't known about. Yeah. And I think that's intensely important.
Yeah. I had been vaguely familiar with the story, but it wasn't until, you know, Somto, the head of the studio and founder of Vortex, brought it up and said we were going to do this, you know, this Kickstarter, we were putting together this this project, and told me about the project, that I actually had gone into it and looked even deeper and realized, okay, like, wow, there's so much that is still being affected, right? Because it's their lives. These are people who are affected. And to be able to tell it in a, like mentioned, a space opera manner, you know, there is so much that, you know, things on the surface, you know, sci-fi or fantasy, it looks as if it's just, you know, an imaginary thing, but you can definitely tell a humanistic interpersonal, you know, stories with that, you know, and just add those elements to it and just make it this epic, grander scheme of things, you know. And I'm proud of the work that, you know, the artists and the writers have put together. And everybody who's a part of this project, it just really feels the same way, is that, you know, we're telling the story of the little guy, pretty much. You know, it's a kid, Bobini, who is trapped and is lost without his family, and his entire tribe is gone, you know, and then to want to see him succeed in not only becoming a man, but also needing to step up into realizing that he is basically the last of his people. And what does that mean for that? And I think that sense of isolation that we've all kind of felt at some point in time, is like, we're all alone. Well, here we can literally see, you know, a child that's all alone and is up against a corporation, because that's really what it is. The corporation that you don't have the resources to fight against. And that can be against any corporation, let's be honest. You know, you don't have the resources to fight against them for whatever reason. And so we just wanted to make sure that, you know, as much as it's action-packed and, you know, it's filled with these elements,
of futurism and, you know, set in another world, and these epic world building at the center of it is, you know, the strong character and his journey, and, you know, that it's relatable and compelling. And we all kind of have those conflicting desires of revenge and the struggle of, you know, fighting against the man, and just really having, putting that on the screen is very important to us. And so that's why, you know, we encourage everybody to, you know, you can visit, personally, our Kickstarter and our Instagram, where the link is in our Instagram at VX Animation, and, you know, make a donation to help us bring this story to life, because it will also take, you know, African in animation to the next level as well, you know, and it's just a global event for a global artists and writers that have come together and really want to make sure that this project sees the light, and the other people who may not know about the story get to see it in a different method.
Unfortunately, we've lost the last 10 minutes of this interview due to some technical issues, but we would like to say thank you once again to Manera Douglas for joining us on this interview. We'd also like to thank VX Animations for letting us talk about Black Rain. You can find them at VX Animation, VX Comics, or Vortex Central on all social media. We will leave a link to Black Rain's Kickstarter in our show notes. Once again, we'd like to say thank you to Manera Douglas for joining us. You can find us on The Nerd Alternative without the E on Twitter, with the E on Instagram and Reddit. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Podchaser, Good Pods, on anywhere that you'd like to listen to podcasts. Thank you once again for listening. We'll see you next time.